Welcome back. Our guest this week is State Senator Jeremy Moss, who wants more transparency in state government. Our lead story, the Democrats and Republicans in the House come to a deal that the governor's looking at. And Ms. Whitmer says no to being vice president. On the OTR panel, Kyle Malin, Lauren Gibbons, and Rick Pluta sit in with us as we get the inside out off the record.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by a grant from Vanguard Public Affairs, with nearly three decades of experience providing strategic counsel to leaders in the public, philanthropic, and private sectors. Vanguard Public Affairs specializes in digital communications, issue management, public affairs, and reputation management services for communities, organizations, and leaders across the Midwest. Information at vanguard-pa.com. And now, this edition of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.
Thank you very much, and welcome to Off the Record. Well, this is an interesting story. We show up on the House floor yesterday afternoon, and the Speaker and the Democratic leader say, we've got a deal on the K-12 budget. Tell us.
Yeah, that was pretty unexpected and very interesting. The House Democrats and Republicans have apparently come together. We're going to see some more of the details a little bit later this morning.
We're taping
this
on Thursday.
Yep. So we're going to see some more of the details, see what they ended up coming to a conclusion on, but it's very interesting because nowhere in this talk was Governor Whitmer. So we've got a bipartisan deal, but apparently not one that the governor is on board with.
I'm here hoping that some of you guys can explain it to me.
Because, as to where she was?
Just everything that's going on.
She said she was not part of the negotiations. Mm-hmm. So what are these guys supposed to do?
We are all trying to, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, I think we're all trying to figure out what the end game is here, and if in fact there is one.
Well, I think the House Democrats are trying to get whatever they can out of the budget, and because they don't have the kind of leverage, let's say, the Senate Democrats have. The Senate Democrats have a tool that they can use to hold up the budgets on the floor. It's kind of like a filibuster at the federal level, but it's not that. It's called immediate effect. I'm not going to get into it. But the
basically, it's a vote that requires super majorities, and that's where the leverage comes.
In order to send a finished budget to the governor's desk that takes effect now, they need four Democrats to side with the Republicans to do that.
And so the Senate Democrats actually have leverage. So they have been negotiating, getting things in the budget along the way. The House Democrats have none of that. The House Republicans can just shove a budget right by the House Democrats, and they can't do squat about it. So they've decided to actually negotiate and put their negotiations out in the public and say, hey, look, we got something accomplished, and this is what we got accomplished. I think the difference here is they've not been working with the governor on that, mm-hmm. and so they're opening themselves up to getting run over maybe later in the process.
Don't you think they at least gave her a heads up this was coming?
Yeah, they gave her a heads up.
Okay, all right, she basically said, go ahead and do it.
Well, every governor is consequential because any bill has to get a governor's signature. But the issue there is how consequential a governor will be, because this has become a game of budget chicken as we get closer and closer to the October 1st deadline to get this done, because that's the start of the state's fiscal year.
Well, let's point out, okay, they put $30 million extra in for special ed. She was at $120 million, so that's a pretty good gap. They did close the spending gap between the haves and the have-nots and the just by $418, which is pretty good. That started at $10,000 years ago under Danny DeGroat and others. So that's some movement. So why not send her that?
Yeah, I think it's really flipped the script on, you know, we were all talking about a couple of weeks ago the negotiations between the governor and the Republican leaders, and now the House Democrats have really inserted themselves into this conversation saying, we are a player, you need us to get Democratic values in this budget. And, you know, it is kind of a power move at this point to say, hey, you know, if you're not going to come to the negotiating table, we are.
There's another issue here, though, too, Tim. I don't know if the House Democrats really are seeing this budget through the lens of the governor and what she's looking at. From what I was able to gather yesterday on the House floor, they suspect that what the governor is doing is hiding in the weeds and waiting for the Republicans to give her a budget so that she can go through and line item the heck out of
it. Absolutely. And
then just kill a bunch of Republican things and drive them back to the negotiating table.
Absolutely.
And the House Democrats don't know if that's going to actually move the needle and if they're actually going to get anything out of that process. They're skeptical. They think that Granholm tried that back in 2009 and it didn't really work out that well. The Republicans just looked at their line items and were like, eh, whatever, and then just moved on. So they're saying, hey, look, if we can get something out of it now, we're going to go ahead and do that because we're not sure we're going to get anything out of the strategy that she's going for. Yeah.
Sometimes the best deal is the least worst deal.
Should we be writing that down? are you going for quote of the day on that?
That's why we pause, so we can all let that soak in.
That was profound.
Well, it's just that, you know, every leader in this and every caucus in both the House and the Senate have to look at that, have to look at this and say, where do we have leverage, and understand where maybe they don't. And the big question mark hanging over all of that is, what will Gretchen Whitmer do? What will Gretchen Whitmer accept?
But don't you think that Lee Chatfield, the House Speaker, just loved it yesterday?
Oh my gosh.
Having the Democratic leader standing next to him, just 35 feet away from the governor's office, maybe a little more, and basically not saying, here you go, Governor.
Mm. Well, yeah, she had a quote saying, you know, she wanted a budget before the weekend, and
there
I was like,
is.
Whoa.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is turned into a very interesting budget negotiation. Nobody is predicting a shutdown, and I don't think we'll have one. Do we still all agree on that?
I do agree. I don't think we're going to get a shutdown, particularly with the UAW strike going on. There's already people out of work. For Governor Whitmer to basically say 38,000 state employees, many of whom are union employees, you don't
Some
have to report.
Some of whom are UAW members.
Exactly.
I don't think you guys
have to show up for work. Mm-hmm. I don't think she's going to do that, especially over a tax increase.
I don't think anyone would look good coming out of a shutdown at this juncture. I think they all recognize that. It's not something that makes a lot of political sense at this point, especially, as you said, with the UAW strike. There's a lot of people out of work is just not a good look.
All right, let's talk about looking at the governor and her possibility of being interested in vice president. Take a look.
Give me a one-word reaction to Gretchen Whitmer, candidate for vice president.
It's happening to Governor Gretchen Whitmer just like it did to all the other governors before her, including former Governor Soapy Williams, George Romney, Bill Milliken, Jim Blanchard, John Engler, Jennifer Granholm, and Rick Snyder. All of these Michigan former governors were mentioned for possible positions in a presidential administration. And following her appearance at the Detroit Democratic presidential debate recently, Governor Whitmer's name entered the conversation for what else? Vice president. Which brings us back to that original question.
Give me a one-word reaction to Gretchen Whitmer, candidate for vice president.
No.
Give me another word.
It's, you know what, all the speculation is such a distraction from all the stuff that I'm really trying to get done. And so I'm not going to engage in it.
But how firm is that no? If drafted, will you not run? If elected, will you not serve? Governor, do you want to talk about this?
Let's talk about the budget, Tim.
Sure, the governor said no, but in this hyperactive social media world that we live in, there are those who won't take no for an answer. In fact, the Republicans are already criticizing her for trying to polish her national image at the expense of the problems back home. So one more definitive question to her and an answer from her.
Say for me you do not want to be vice president.
Tim, I do not want to be vice president.
Okay, that puts that to rest, doesn't it?
I am grateful to be the 49th governor of the state of Michigan. I am determined to see through all of the agenda items that I've listed, and I am going to fight to make sure that we fix the roads once and for all.
So the speculation may continue, but the governor makes it clear she's not interested in vice president. So, Kyle, why were you laughing during that piece?
Because I loved watching how she wanted to maneuver around your answers. I mean, never really slamming the door shut, but trying to make it look really clear that that's not what she wants to talk about right now.
Is it the door shut? Wait a minute. When she says, I do not want to be, what more do you want?
She handled the questions exactly the way that she should have. And partially because I don't know how you slam the door shut on speculation by other people, one. And two, if for some reason she is tapped for the position, then she can say, look, I was very happy being the governor of Michigan, but my party called and I felt an obligation to serve.
I didn't want this position, but this position needed me. This country needs me right now, and I am compelled to serve.
Laura. And someone...
Yeah. I think
some sense into this.
I think it's a little early in terms of, you know, for someone to come forward and say, I want to be vice president. So I think the no answer is pretty expected at this point. And you know, as you mentioned in your piece, every Michigan governor at some point has kind of been thrown into the speculation. It's, you know, a part of being a Democratic or Republican governor, depending on who's looking for a candidate.
Swing state with an emblematic economy and a substantial number of electoral votes. That the speculation on that is just magnetic.
Well, it's particularly if you got a female, and if we got a male at the top of the ticket on the Democratic side, Joe Biden calls her up. You know, he needs that Midwest connection. She's younger. She represents a state. She doesn't have a huge record as governor, but good enough as far as the vaping goes. You know, it's a state on the rebound. I think it makes a lot of sense. I can understand why her name's being mentioned. Let's just put it that way.
And on the vaping, she showed that she has skills, that she can announce that she's going to announce emergency rules before she announces the emergency rules. And I'm sure that after this, there will be the announcement that they've been announced.
All right, let's contrast her handing the BP thing to Mr. Snyder. Remember what he did? He never put it to rest. He told me afterwards privately, he said, I wanted to continue the speculation because every time they asked me, I could tell the Michigan story. So he deliberately let the rumor and the speculation go forward. She is trying to, I take her at her word. It is a distraction, okay? And it does force you to take your eye off the ball. And she said, look, I'm willing to work for the ticket. I have no problem with that at all. But, you know, she's from Michigan.
Don't forget that there's a budget controversy lingering out there, and something like a government shutdown or a partial government shutdown doesn't exactly burnish your credentials for a national ticket.
Yeah. And she hasn't shunned the national spotlight. I mean, she broke the vaping stuff in the Washington Post. So it's not like
she gave more fuel to this fire that she's positioning herself for something.
Right. So it's not as though she's ignoring the national presence. You know, she's been featured in some national articles about the Midwest trend. And it's so I don't think that she's, you know, shunning the spotlight necessarily. But, yeah, I think she probably does view any speculation for a higher ticket at this point to be a distraction from the budget, for example.
Yeah, especially in this climate.
I mean, anybody who's announcing or positioning or saying they want to run for vice president will not be vice president, right? They will not be, all right? We can just say that. So she can say in September, look, I don't want to be vice president. But if somebody calls in April and says, we want to interview you for vice president because we think we need you to help prevent Donald Trump from getting a second term, she's not going to say no to that.
On the one hand, there is little to lose by stoking that speculation. There is one critical thing to lose, which is if she becomes a symbol within the Democratic coalition, that also makes her a bigger target for the Republican Party at the same time that she's trying to get a lot of stuff done.
They already started sniping at her. Okay, she did the Today Show and left the budget negotiations. That's where the Republicans trotted that story out. So it does put her in an untenable position from a standpoint. Look, Mr. Snyder had it right. He says people hired me to be governor of the state. In his first year, he didn't do any national TV shows, if you recall. Didn't do Meet the Press, didn't do Face the Nation, and he did not do it on purpose because he said they hired me to run Michigan.
Well, he understood the perils of the optics of that.
Yeah. All right, quickly, the Republicans are heading to the island. Why are they going there?
Well, it's their biennial conference. So every 2 years, when it's not an election, they go up in September. They bring up some speakers. It's usually a good opportunity for folks who are looking for running for office the next year to meet and greet, to fundraise, get their name out there.
Try out their messaging.
This year, we don't have a lot of that. The U.S. Senate race already looks kind of sewed up. Looks like it'll be John James. We have some questions on the congressional side and who's running for different offices. We do have Mike Pence coming up, the vice president, to rally people up. Sarah Huckabee Sanders will be up there as well. The minority leader from the U.S. House, McCarthy, will be there as well. So there will be some speakers, but it doesn't have the same kind of energy as, let's say, last year in 2017 when we had that competitive gubernatorial primary.
Right. I think they're pretty heavy on the keynotes this year as Mike Pence and some of those national names coming to Michigan, which is significant. But, yeah, in terms of some of those big races, we kind of know who's going to be running for a lot of those at this point.
Well, it's ramping up for trying to keep Michigan
right
in the Trump
column. I think 2020 is the big focus here.
And they're going to the Grand Hotel before it changes over to a Holiday Inn Junior, or what? I mean, without all due respect, that story has raised some concern on the island.
Well, it has raised some concern, and I think you've done some reporting on this, Tim, some good reporting about concerns about the philanthropy that the Grand Hotel has been able to rain down on the rest of the island with different projects and so forth. And are they going to be as engaged in the community as the Musser family has been engaged? And, you know, when you've got a big corporate entity coming out of Colorado, are they going to be as connected? The hope is they will be, but that's hard to say. You know, when you got to check in with a higher up somewhere else, the answer isn't always yes.
Well, and the Musser family and the independent ownership of the Grand Hotel is part of the legend of the Grand Hotel.
Let's see, did we put the chocolates on the pillow or not? You know, that sort of stuff.
I'm just wondering if the wallpaper will change at all, if there's any
there
updates
you go.
There.
All right, stay tuned. Let's call in our guest, Senator Jeremy Moss. Democratic State Senator Jeremy Moss is in his first term in the state Senate. Prior to that, he served in the House from 2014 to 2018. He holds a journalism degree from MSU, is a member of the NAACP, and worked with the mayor of Southfield and two former lawmakers in the legislature before going there himself. Senator, good to see you.
Happy. Before you ask, I'm not interested in being vice president.
You want? No. Okay, I don't think we had that on the list, but if you'd like us to ask, okay.
I just wanted you to know that.
Kyle's got something different, I think.
Thanks for being here. Senator, when you first started in the legislature, you had established a very good relationship with the time, another freshman by the name of Lee Chatfield. Yeah. You guys were buddy-buddy. Now he's
doing well for himself these days.
He's doing great. He's Speaker of the House now. You're over in the Senate. Have you guys been able to maintain that connection? Do you still feel there's a bipartisan spirit there with him in that position?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the difference now is that I'm serving in one chamber and he's in the other, but we still talk to one another, especially about what's going on in the legislature. And it just goes to show you, you know, you can look at the partisan bickering in the headlines, but the reality is a lot of us get along with one another. We're able to work with one another. And that goes to the big question. I don't think we're going to head toward a budget shutdown, a government shutdown, because we are talking to one another. The governor is talking to the legislative leaders. And, you know, people like myself and Lee communicate all the time about what's going on in Lansing. And so there is a camaraderie
but
there.
But what were the optics yesterday of the Democratic leader, Speaker, doing a deal and the governor being on the outside looking in? What were the optics?
But there are quadrant meetings going on all the time. And look at the last 8 years where
This
is a non-story.
Why?
You know, because the governor's involved in these discussions. The governor has been calling leaders into her office. And I think it's actually good that she might have empowered them to negotiate on their own and then come to her when they've brokered a final deal.
Did
she is absolutely.
Did she tell you to say that?
She did not tell me to say
so
that.
You don't think there's any tension at this point between legislative Democrats and the governor?
I don't think there's a lot of tension between legislative Democrats.
Not a lot,
and the
but
government.
There's some.
Well, you know, I think naturally, you know, we're going to have growing pains, just naturally speaking. But at the end of the day, I'm really excited that we have a Democratic governor after 8 years under Republican control. And my first 4 years under Republican control. And we have somebody who goes to bat for our values every single day and toe-to-toe with the Republican leadership in the House and Senate. So I'm happy she's at the table because it would just be more of the same. Democrats shut out of the discussion as we have been for the last 4 years. And I don't think you would have seen a Republican speaker and a Democratic leader come together on anything if we didn't have a Democratic
well,
government.
What should people conclude from the Democratic and Republican leaders in the House getting ready to send her budgets and basically daring her to line item veto or you know, altogether veto bills?
I think that's part of governing. I think that's part of the process. You know,
it's a little unique.
It is a little unique. We're in divided government. You know, so for the last 8 years, you know, I love how Rick Snyder said, you know, I have a budget on time every one of these last 8 years. That's really easy to do when one party's at the table. So the governor yields her power, this line item veto power, to insert herself into the budget. She can't put things in the budget, but she can certainly take things out of the budget, and then we'll deal with supplementals afterwards. So this is part of the process. So I don't see this as some sort of friction between the governor and the legislature, Democrats and Republicans. This is part of governing, and it's going to lead us to getting a budget done on time, I hope.
You just said something very interesting. So do you know something about the governor planning vetoes and then sending supplementals to the legislature later? Is that Is that the strategy?
I think that's been in discussion. I don't know if it's the strategy. I don't know what's going to happen. You know, we sit here, you know, just about a dozen days before the budget deadline, and I've heard all scenarios floated out there. And so we'll see where we end up in a final product. But the governor has her power as governor to insert herself in this budget.
So if they put $500 million into the budget for roads, will you vote yes on that?
I don't know, because I don't know what the final MDOT budget is going to look like. Oh, and I'll tell you, no, Tim.
Wait, that's a very simple question.
It's not a simple question, Tim.
You're a journalist. You understand simplicity.
And you have not asked a simple question. You have $500 million when we should be talking about $2.5 billion.
I understand.
And if you go to my Southfield folks back home will tell you it costs to pave one lane of road for 1 mile,
$1 million. I got that. The question was, if there's $500 million in for the roads, will you vote for
it? It's insufficient, Tim. So, you
right,
know,
so
I don't know what the final product's going to look like. But $500 million is really insufficient, and it's going to slow our decline. So if Republican leadership is telling me $500 million solves the problem for once and for all,
that's
not an answer.
They didn't
that's
say
not an
that.
Answer.
So now,
they
Tim,
might.
You're saying it's complicated.
No, I didn't.
Yeah, actually, you
so
just did.
With long-term road funding apparently off the table until the budgets are done, what's the best-case scenario for legislative Democrats on roads?
We go back to the negotiation table on October 1st. And we talk about how we didn't put road funding into this final budget because Republicans weren't willing to negotiate on road funding. And so I don't think that, you know, the person who sits in their living room and watches this program, I don't think thinks, you know, oh, I wish we had our roads fixed by September 30th. They've been wishing for the last 8 years
but
that our roads have been better.
So
we can still tackle this discussion with a sense of urgency without having this September 30th deadline loom over.
So you prefer to not see any one-time funding or any additional road funding until the larger plan is
that, that's what we've been doing. That's what we've been doing the last 8 years, and it hasn't worked. Last year, House and Senate Republicans crowed that they put another $175 million into roads. And so, you know, it didn't do anything for the roads that are crumbling in my district. And so that's the biggest problem, is that I don't want to get into this half-baked measures that we've been seeing for the last 8 years that haven't solved the problem. We need a dedicated new revenue stream to go towards roads. And $500 million in the budget ain't going to do it.
Well, Senator, then the gas tax increase will do it. Why have you not introduced a bill to raise the gas tax 45 cents as your governor has asked?
So that was baked into the governor's budget, and I thought that was probably the best proposal right now to actually solve the problem. But I'm one of those people that in May of 2015 wanted the bumper sticker that said, "Don't blame me, I voted for Proposal 1. I'm one of a very few people who would say that. But 4 years later, I had a coffee hour just the other day in Southfield, and I said, you know what? I'm willing to take unpopular stances, and I know most of the people in this room voted against it, but that was probably the most realistic way to get road funding. And one guy in the back goes, "I voted for it." So at least I had him.
You might not like it, but would you vote for a stopgap budget if that's the only option for keeping things going come October 1st?
We expand on that.
Well,
a continuation budget.
Yeah. I don't think we're going to get there. I don't think we're going to get to a point where we're going to have to do a continuation budget.
So, yeah, a one-penny sales tax hike, you'd like that?
Putting it up to the voters to decide, yes. So the problem with that Prop 1 campaign is that there were so many things that they were talking about. Right. I look back to my Southfield City Council days. We had a road funding crisis in Southfield. As a city council member, I put a ballot initiative forward that put $99 million into roads over 11 years. Big chunk of money. Big investment. Voters supported it because we told them it was going to fix the roads. And in Southfield, we got more road construction than any other city in Oakland County. So it's about trust. It's about trust that when we say we're going to dedicate your taxes toward road funding, it goes toward road funding. And so if voters really believe that the gas tax is going to go towards roads and we're going to increase the sales tax to kind of backfill that, which was Prop 1, then they'll support it. They didn't believe it 4 years ago.
So you would then introduce a gas tax increase if that meant that maybe it starts discussions on maybe one of these Proposal 1 type things where you could vote for this, or you could vote for a one penny sales tax increase either way, it would go to the roads.
That's something that I could pitch to voters. That's something that, you know, we have to make a revenue-generating system that goes towards roads, because doing nothing is literally making our roads crumble. So the biggest problem is that, it, you know, the governor says 45 cents is going to raise $2.5 billion. It's not going to be less next year. It's not going to be less the next year. I talked to a fiscal analyst who's kind of been watching over some of this stuff from afar, who said if Governor Snyder had introduced a 10-cent increase in his first year, we wouldn't be talking about 45 cents this year. So it's not going to be a problem that goes away. You know, the roads aren't going to fix themselves. So we got to figure out what is that revenue stream, what does it look like, and how do we get it toward roads? And $500 million once ain't going to do it, Tim.
Go ahead. I was going to pivot to another topic.
I was just going to ask, if this goes to the ballot, road funding goes to the ballot, how does having statewide elections, federal offices, a presidential election on the ballot complicate that sales job that you were talking about?
I think that people will be coming out and voting. And my stance back in that 2015 road funding proposal is, if we said proposal one fixes the roads, if that was the slogan instead of all this other thing that was put out there, we would have voted for it as a state.
Senator, I have to interrupt. You're a gamer. Will you stay for overtime?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay. And I give you the first question. You got a deal?
Sure, yeah.
There you go. All right,
great.
Stay tuned. WKAI.org for Overtime with Senator Moss. And now look at these closed credits.
Production of Off the Record is made possible in part by a grant from Vanguard Public Affairs. With nearly three decades of experience providing strategic counsel to leaders in the public, philanthropic, and private sectors, Vanguard Public Affairs specializes in digital communications, issue management, public affairs, and reputation management services for communities, organizations, and leaders across the Midwest. Information at vanguard-pa.com. For more Off the Record, visit WKAR.org. Michigan public television stations have contributed to the production costs of Off the Record with Tim Skubick.